Welcome back to Discourse, the weekly occult and esoteric podcast hosted by myself, Abimon the Great, and Dr. Anna Stone. This week we're discussing the taxonomy of spirits, the subtle differences between ghosts, demons, poltergeists, astral entities, djinn, and everything in between. Breathe in, young magus, and let the work begin. Okay, welcome back to Discourse with myself, Abimon the Great, joined as always by lovely Dr. Anna Stone.
Hello.
This week we're going to be discussing spiritual hierarchies at the request of one of our viewers. So they wanted to know about different classes of spirits and spiritual hierarchies.
Right. And we very much appreciate that recommendation. And again, for future reference, feel free to comment and request some topics.
Yeah, I actually thought it was a great idea because it can be pretty confusing because different cultures treat spirits differently. And I think most cultures, every culture has some idea of spirits. But when we're talking about the operating forces, there are certain cultures that lead more into an ever-present kind of energy that or life force, and where one of the unique features of Western civilization, there is a really developed hierarchy of spiritual hierarchy, because we didn't really have for a few thousand years a kind of ever-present life force.
Is that like animism? Is that what you're talking about? Like that idea that everything within everything is consciousness?
Yeah. So I think in Eastern practices, you see in their religions, there's more of a developed idea of a kind of life force or energy that's responsible for stuff like illness and when bad things happen, right?
Are those the humors?
Yeah, the humors, I guess the Greeks would would have that old school medicine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, throughout all cultures and religions, though, there is some fundamental fundamental belief system in a greater being.
Yeah.
Across the board.
Yes.
That is, I don't think there's any culture that I'm aware of that does not have that. But the developed hierarchy like that we're used to now, or that many of us have heard of, or it's been, you know, showcased in films or books, et cetera, that is unique to Western civilization.
Yes, I think it does. I think it starts in Mesopotamia. That's where it starts. But the expansive angelology and demonology, right, that is this huge philosophical and theological expansion on something that maybe in tribal cultures is just evil spirits and good spirits.
Well, we'll talk about that because we're going to go over some Native American spirit hierarchies, and then we'll contrast how that can line up with others. You know, because they're all very similar. They're just, again, culturally and geographically different. Yeah. So most of them anyway, have an idea of the supreme being and then the classes or levels underneath that, right?
Yeah.
And some of them have humans in that mix. Some of them don't.
Right? Yes.
So let's talk. What are we going to talk about first?
Well, yeah. So I think what's most important is like, why do we have to classify spirits, right?
Right.
Why is that necessary? I think for occultists, magicians, esotericists, mystics, people that are kind of like pushing the envelope on their spiritual practice, going off the beaten trail, it is incredibly important to be able to discern between spirit fauna. Because you don't know where you're getting your information from. You don't know where you're being led or what it is, right? And so that's where I think the discernment of spirits, which is something that we're incredibly focused on in the entry levels. And then I think there is a certain threshold that some of the greatest mystics of all time focus specifically on developing how do you discern spirits.
And even some of the greatest of all time failed at this.
Yes. Yeah.
So, in fact, this seems to be the hang up for most, right? Is being led astray, being told, like being sent on some wild goose chase.
Yes.
A lot of different things can happen. So discernment is key. Yeah, it is key. But it can be tricky. So, I mean, I think trial and error definitely helps, but it's, I would never recommend just going trial and error. Like I would definitely do research into it. So that's what we're going to help break it down tonight about what is likely to be encountered when you're working in this type of system, right? Yeah. Magic. What are we likely to encounter as humans?
Mm-hmm.
And then what are people that are not in the occult? What are they likely to encounter? Because there's plenty of people that have encountered spirits in this world. I mean, I wrote a paper on this, right? That got published. It's 97% of people like that were surveyed claim to have either firsthand knowledge of an interaction with the spirit or someone close to them claims the same.
Yeah.
That's a lot. That's almost everyone.
Yeah. I definitely think that at least in modernity, until you start talking about spirits, nobody's going to mention them.
Yeah. No. In fact, you know, even at my work, the people I work with, you know, academics, I don't care. I talk about it all the time.
Yeah.
I'm not, because I'm just 100% me. You know, I don't try to front for anybody anymore. But when I was mentioning some of the things that we've experienced, not too much in depth, one of my colleagues, the most skeptical of all, started telling me about how he was able to see a friend, you know, in his mind's eye, and then, you know, had a connection. That person called him right immediately, like all the things that people experience. But then also some other more kind of scary things that have happened to him. And he does not deny that it could be spirits, but he just doesn't say it is, you know, he leaves it open.
I think that's one of the surprising things is that if you open up to people about having experience with spirits, a lot of people that you would not expect come forward like, oh yeah, I've seen a ghost or I've had this kind of experience. And a lot of times it's older people. And I think one of the... So let's say people that are in their 20s, you're not going to hear those experiences as much, but people that are in middle age or old...
Yeah, have some life under your belt, maybe.
Have some life. Yeah, well, I used to think it was one or two things. It was either the older people, their mind was going or maybe it was life experience, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, so... and this is something I didn't think about till right this minute, but a lot of the hauntings that people experience in their lives aren't actually hauntings. They're actually them. And that is new research that's come out about how people that are haunted that like tend to experience this frequently in their life, probably it's them. It's not the house. It's not some possession you bought. It's you. it's you for whatever reason. And it could either be that you have some kind of psychokinesis or psychokinetic ability of some sort that is causing it and you're not even aware of it.
Yeah.
That's most likely the case. And then the rarer occurrence would be an actual haunting because, I mean, most people, when they pass on, they go, you know, they don't stay. Like, why? I don't know why you'd want to stay behind in as a ghost, you know? So that's more rare. However, this is a way that a lot of the more infernal or kind of astral beings can get at you is to imitate a dead relative or something like that. Or changeling doppelganger kind of vibe? Or the mimic, you know, mimic
that,
voices?
So doppelgangers are the one thing that freaks me.
That's his kryptonite.
Yeah, that is my kryptonite in the paranormal. They scare the ever...
Oh, and we heard one.
Yeah, we did hear one.
Yeah,
one
we did.
Morning. That
at my old house, and it was my daughter's. Well,
all the things I have experienced with you, we've had spirits threatening to start the apocalypse, right?
I know.
And crazy. Like that, I'm able to be like, whatever.
Yep.
Whatever, man. You know?
Yeah.
But
stupid. Yeah.
But when it comes to a mimic, I'm like, oh,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah. So what happened? We were at my house, and my daughter was at school. Okay. Yeah. And the only other kid that lives anywhere near us is also at school. Okay, that's important. Yeah. And we were sitting doing research for an episode, What were we doing?
We were in bed.
Oh, we were in bed.
It was in the morning.
It was in our home.
Yeah. In her bedroom, and something walked out of her room and called for you.
My mom?
In her voice.
Yeah, and it was her voice. And we both just looked at each other. We're like, and this is not the first, that wasn't the first time. There was another time where I was at my desk in broad daylight, and I was on the phone with her grandmother, and I see out the corner of my eye her walk and stand at the sliding door, looking out into the backyard. And I was waiting for her to say something to me, come give me a morning hug or something, right?
Yeah.
And then I got off the phone with her grandma, and I turned to look at her, and there's no one there. And I was like, okay. I didn't freak out. You know, I'm just like, all right. So I get up and I go back to check on her, and she's sound asleep. Sound asleep. Yeah. Like, I saw her physically, like physical solid person standing there.
Yeah.
You know, to the point where I said to her grandmother, oh, she just got up. I got to go. You know, like, and she was absolutely not there.
So, So I think right now we're getting into the parapsychological spirits, right?
Possibly.
So I guess like your ghosts, your poltergeists, your doppelgangers, the stuff that your everyday person who doesn't practice magic can run into and probably has a story about.
Right? Or they know someone that definitely has a story
and
about
so
it.
So there is a kind of a difference between these and the spirits that we deal with in magic and the occult. Yes. Though sometimes there is an overlap. That by dealing with those spirits, it exacerbates these spirits over here. That like these ones are more frequently. But I think it's important we talk about the parapsychological ones because I guess like let's go with your average friendly house ghost, right? You know, your average
are haunted. They friendly? Like, I mean.
Well, so the spirits of the dead or the let's go with that because okay, you deal with those a lot. Yeah.
This I do. Yeah. So people that have passed on, their spirits, I can only speak for myself, but it doesn't track with me when I hear about people that call on the dead.
Yeah.
Because that's not a thing that I've ever done. They come to me.
Yeah.
Always. I don't say, I'm trying to reach the soul of, you know, no. Yeah, like, it usually starts before it starts. It starts with, I see something in my house that I'm not familiar with, right? And I say, oh, what was that? And then I get enough of an image to know that it's male, female, approximate age, and likely how they died, right? Something like that. And then usually, sometimes a name, sometimes. And then I don't know why. Who they are. And I'm just like, God damn it, you know? And then the next day or 2 days later or something, I have a client that has booked with me. And as soon as we get online, you know, on the Zoom, that spirit's there again, standing just off to the side. And the person tells me that they are trying to get in contact with someone that died. And then I'm like, oh, okay. It's like that for me.
Yeah.
I don't call out. I don't say, oh, give me a name of somebody and I'm going to try to connect. Though that's not how it works for me.
Yeah.
So I think that's disrespectful too, kind of, if you're doing that. If you're trying to pull, if they are really in another plane of existence and they're in a better place, okay, why would I want to interrupt that and have them come back? That's kind of messed up. So that's never been a thing I've done. It just so happens to work that way for me. Now it could be completely different for other people. I can only speak for my own experience, but that's typically what happens. And those spirits are usually almost always, they're there to apologize for something that they feel they did wrong or some kind of harm that they caused or pain or something, or they're there to say that they're okay. Rarely has it been adversarial, right?
Yeah. A
couple times it's been angry about something, but not at the person or at me. It's just angry, you know? But they're usually, they go when you tell them to go, mostly, right? And they don't really mess around in your house. Like, they're not doing anything. typically.
From what I've gathered, they're mostly harmless, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like they're projecting themselves to me. They're not actually there.
Yeah.
You know, they're not actually in my house. They're just projecting part of themselves to be able to speak to me, I feel like.
Yeah.
Whereas then there's haunted houses.
Yeah.
Where there's an echo of something that happened in the past. And that's not intelligent. Mm-hmm. Right? That is an echo. It's a recording of an event that repeats.
Yeah, so that's the standard theory in parapsychology that they think it's some kind of either like electromagnetic mm-hmm. impression on the environment of some kind of tragedy or whatever, sure. but it's like a tape on loop. And that's yep. kind of like the theory that they throw at, you know, the haunted tourist attraction. Oh, go to the haunted plantation. Well, there's right. a woman in the window.
So ones that repeat over and over in the same circumstance, yeah. that's that.
Yeah.
Because maybe there is an event that happened and yeah. it was just so upsetting or so violent, or it left some kind of scar on the environment. Mm-hmm. And when the conditions are correct, again, like in all ways, atmospherically, energetically, et cetera, then it replays itself again over and over. It's just like a movie on loop, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't interact with you, you know? It's just you see it. And usually they're visual. Those are usually visual. Like people yeah. see it, you know, with their eyes or cameras. Yeah. But then there's the kind where you got poltergeists going on in your house.
Yeah, that one's actually, I love poltergeists. Oh, God. There's, I feel
terrifying.
In parapsychology, they have the most like hard scientific yes, evidence.
Absolutely, they do.
There, yeah.
Yep.
There's one research study, and me being a former audio nerd, I absolutely love this study because I could read it and understand the science in it. I was like, oh my gosh.
Oh,
like,
yay.
I
That's
actually,
always fun.
I'm reading a research paper and actually understand what they're saying.
Right? Yeah, they can be hard.
But there was University of Pennsylvania. It was a Dr. Barry Colvin. And I think over the course of 30 years, every time there was a poltergeist reporting, he'd pack up his equipment and he'd run and go and record the sounds. And so basically, when there is like if I knock on this wood right now and you look at an audio envelope for it, it's yeah. going to have a sharp peak and, mm-hmm. and a slow decay.
Right.
And what Dr. Barry Colvin found is that in all the sounds of poltergeist phenomenon, instead of having a sharp peak at the beginning, like if you were just to regularly knock on a piece of wood, that they would have, there would be a tension buildup before it snapped and hit a peak. Uh-huh. And so you can assume from that there is some type of energetic
yeah.
tension that's mm-hmm. happening in it before it snaps and pops and the door rattles or something
100%.
Like
that. Yeah. I have not read that study.
It's amazing.
Like, I must. Okay. Yeah. So there's a plethora of research that was done by the CIA mainly
yeah.
In Brazil about this and then all through the United States and, you know, poltergeist, German for noisy ghost.
Noisy ghost, yeah.
But really what it is what? What is it?
Well, so the popular theory is that it is a psychokinetic phenomenon that's an expression of the afflicted. So mm-hmm. there's one person in the home that is going through some kind of transition or
puberty.
Yeah.
They could be on the spectrum and not be able to communicate yeah. as well. Tension, stress, lots of things, but mainly some kind of life change.
Yeah, it mostly afflicts young women. Mm-hmm. So young women that are either going through puberty or being abused, but it can affect yeah. young boys too.
Yes.
Rarely affects older men. But
yeah, I can't think of one actually, but also the thing is that other people in the house experience it.
Yes.
It is not only the person who's causing it mm-hmm. without knowledge, of course, that does it, that experiences it, but everyone around them experiences yeah. it if they're around long enough. And so the idea now is that there is a circuit, you know, we've run off of electricity.
Yeah. yeah.
Our brain waves, our heartbeats, all electric, right? It's measured in joules. This is one of those things where it's like a circuit, a loop that's going and it shoots off outside of the loop. It yeah. escapes and pops the light, uh-huh. rattles the door, makes a knocking sound, etc. Because there's so much energy going on in the person that it's too much to contain and it has to escape.
Yeah.
That's what they think now. And that sounds very legitimate to me because I think about this, right? I don't have hauntings anymore like the kind I used to where things were crazy in my house. Mm-hmm. Like all the time. I lost babysitters over it. Mm-hmm. I had friends that would stop coming over. I had to move multiple times because I thought if I moved, I would be free from it. And it never happened. But if I look at how I was back then, I was filled with angst, anxiousness, panic, stress, you know, so many things and having to keep it together,
yeah.
You know, because I'm a parent, like, and I'm working and I'm going to school. This, I was much younger. So it's like, if I look now, I don't have those experiences anymore. Well, go figure, you know?
Yeah.
Like it ended once things calmed down.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that makes perfect sense. And it's not supernatural, you know, it's just we don't understand it quite. But that's not what we're talking about when we talk about spirits.
Well, yeah. Are so we? I think no. Spirits in general, I think that my personal definition for a spirit is going to be an incorporeal intelligence. That's what it is. And so this pops up when you're talking about spirits of the dead, like somebody's deceased loved one shows up. And this is a pretty normal experience for everybody. You know, I think everybody's got a story in their family of grandpa died and he visited, you know, my sister or whatever. Everybody's got that kind of story close to them.
Yeah.
And that's that I would consider would fall into that category. As for the poltergeist, I classify that more into like psychic phenomenon or psychokinesis, mm-hmm. though there are certain poltergeist phenomenon. I think the most famous one, the Bell Witch, disembodied voices are attached to it. However, there is a classification, a new classification in paranormal. It started with the Mothman case, but it's in Skinwalker Ranch, high strangeness. And high strangeness, people that experience and study high strangeness, they think that it's an intelligence that is orchestrating these events, that's almost teasing them. And so that might be some kind of paranormal spirit there too. And we could kind of assign the Bell Witch over to that one. Well,
okay. Yeah. Also, there is the idea of egregores too, that also can, it could be that. So if you have the meeting of like two minds meet, it creates a third independent entity.
Yeah.
According to the quantum computer at UC Irvine.
Yeah.
That's what they, when they had their model and they put in what happens when two people come together and they share ideas that are similar. And it showed, the computer model showed that a third neutral independent entity is formed and hovers just above them and then eventually takes off on their own. Maybe it's that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. But I don't like voices. It's disembodied voices. I catch them all the time.
Yeah.
I have so many tapes. I have so much video of that. Security camera footage of just noises and voices in my house. You know, but this spirits, especially as it refers or relates to the occult practices and such, are going to be not your dead relatives.
Yeah.
Not your poltergeists. They're going to be actual intelligences, right? That are...
Yes.
Able to interact.
So this is actually something that I spend a lot of time thinking about. So is it just a Western format that we think about spirits as these intelligences? Like, I consistently think about prana and chi and these kind of like energies. Mm-hmm. Like there are in Western society, in the New Age, they kind of have reformatted it to where they believe in energy. That's what we call it now, right?
Yeah.
And it's kind of more amorphous and not an intelligence that you can have a conversation with. And I'm curious, I wonder if occultists give these things intelligence, consolidate them, and make them into an intelligence so they can have a conversation with it.
That's an egregore. Right? Isn't that kind of creating your own...
Yeah, but we're gonna go back to the very beginning.
Yeah, right? Let's start at the start.
So we're gonna start with the Mesopotamians. Right?
Okay.
So the Mesopotamians are going to be the root of our developed spiritual hierarchies in the West. I think we went over it. Did we go over it in the last episode? where we were talking about basically the Mesopotamians were obsessed with spirits.
Oh, yeah.
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 So the Mesopotamians, they
and demons.
Believed that there were spirits responsible for famine, for disease, for death, for miscarriages, basically anything and everything that could happen, whether it was good or bad, was spirits were responsible for it. And so they had all these crazy rituals that they would do, and exorcisms. They were the first people to develop exorcisms. They developed a lot of things first. But they developed these things to keep these evil spirits back, right? Yeah. And a lot of the names for the evil spirits in Mesopotamia have made it into modern demonology.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty interesting thing.
Isn't Lilith one of those?
Yeah, Lilith. So Lilith specifically is I think it was Lilithu, but it was a type of evil spirit that roamed in the wilderness that would go into your house at night and was responsible for crib death. That was also responsible for miscarriages.
So back then, we were still trying to find out what the hell causes SIDS and miscarriage.
Yeah.
And we haven't figured it out still. I mean, actually, they did figure it out, but really?
It's Lilith, obviously.
Lilith, of course.
Duh.
But this is what we were talking about earlier today, about the part of the brain that doesn't like uncertainty. It wants answers. It wants finality and consistency. And so when you don't have an answer for something, it drives you crazy, quite literally, because your brain is designed to answer questions, like to have answers and solutions. And when we don't have something to point to, we will create an answer.
Yeah, yeah. So I think once we get past the Mesopotamians, I first want to, before we get into the complexities of angelology and demonology, I want to talk about the Hellenized world and how they understood spirits. And there was a word, which is where we get our word for demon from. It's daimones. And daimones was a Greek understanding of these spirits. These spirits could be of nature. They could be of people. They could be of homes, locations. But most importantly, they were what went in between earth and the gods and made things happen. Hmm. And so they were basically the responsible force for everything that happens. And so when you look at the Greek understanding of what a spirit is and what spirit its word means is animating force, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
And this is what differentiates it from a soul, because a soul is a hierarchical ordering consciousness, right? But right. A spirit is an animating force. And this is an interesting thing, is why we use blood in magic, because blood is our animating force.
Yes, it is.
A symbol of it's our spirit.
It's a tissue. It's not even, yes, it is. Is that considered, so the daimons or daemons?
Yeah.
The way that I understood it when I took mythology was that they were the spark within the person that has all of their, has the roadmap for how their life's supposed to go and is supposed to help get them there, but they can't actually intervene. That's what I learned in my Greek mythology class just recently. So, but you're saying is that because they're intermediaries and they can get that information from
the higher source? There are different types of daimones, right? Mm-hmm. So there's daimon that is responsible for making the creek babble and flow, and there is a daimon that is responsible for enacting the will of the gods, coming down to earth and enacting the will of the gods. And so the way they classified those daimones, which would be the ones that you would want to use in magic, right? Those were known as aerial spirits.
Oh, right. Right? Yeah.
So mm-hmm. daimones are ambivalent in nature. There can be bad ones and evil ones. There can be good ones. There can be neutral ones. But the ones that would have a kind of magical effect that you would use in magic, these would be your aerial spirits, because basically you would ask the gods for something, and then the thing that made that happen would be the aerial daimones that went between the heavens and the earth. right?
Okay, yeah. So we have that. What else do we have from this in the beginning?
Yeah. So the daimones make an appearance in the PGM, right? They're all over the classical world. If you're going through old astrological literature, so you'll see the Greek philosophers and the theurgists, they'll talk about a personal daimon, which would be what we now call the holy guardian angel,
the higher self, yeah,
the spirit guide, that kind of thing. Socrates had one, but I personally like to understand spirits through the Greek framework because it removes a lot of the dominator hierarchy that happens in Judeo-Christian hierarchy. So if we were going to try to find, you know, if we can say there are good daimons and there are bad daimons, right?
Yes.
And what are going to be our bad daimons? Okay. They are going to be our demons.
Right. So that would be the chthonic. So like in the hierarchy of spirits, there's kind of a couple categories, right? Of types of spirits that almost all of the different civilizations had some word for, but they are classified as, there's the infernal or chthonic deity spirits, and then there's the terrestrial spirits, right?
So yeah, so the terrestrial spirits are very, very interesting, and this is a particular classification that I give Judeo-Christian demons. When I talk about them, I call them terrestrial spirits, and they only get mentioned... The only time I'm familiar with them being mentioned is by Iamblichus. No, hold on. I've got the quote pulled up here. Mm-hmm. But let us therefore now discuss another species of doubt, the cause of which is occult, and which, as you say, is accompanied with violent threats. But it is variously divided about the multitude of threats. For it threatens either to burst the heavens or to unfold the secrets of Isis, or to point out the arcanum in the Adytum, or to stop Baris, or to scatter Osiris to Typhon, or to do something else of the kind. Men do not, however, as you think, threaten by such words as these the sun or the moon or any of the celestial gods, for if they did, more dire absurdities would ensue than those which you lament. But as we before observed, there is a certain genus of powers in the world which is partible, inconsiderate, most irrational, and which receives reason from another and is obedient to it, neither itself employing a proper intelligence, nor distinguishing what is true and false, or what is possible or impossible. A genus, therefore, of this kind, when threatenings are extended, is immediately coexcited and astonished because, as it appears to me, it is naturally adapted to be led by representations and to allure other things through an astounded and unstable fantasy. So this is kind of buried in On the Mysteries of the Egyptians, Assyrians, and Chaldeans. Mm-hmm. It's buried in there. It's very offhand reference. And so the developed demonology at this time was not there. Demons were not demons yet, right? It wasn't that developed in the Judeo-Christian world or European world. Iamblichus is talking about a class of spirits he's calling terrestrial spirits. And the way that these things are operating is that they don't know truth from lie, right? They don't. They don't understand it. That they're irrational. That you have to threaten them to talk to them, right? That...
That's crazy.
Yeah, that they get co-excited with the... Like, basically... The person that talks to them, they get excitable by that, and they are exciting each other, and that they perpetuate a type of fantasy.
The delusions.
Yeah,
they're Delulu with you.
Yeah. Which I think, so this nice. Is why I like, because when you talk about demons, right, because of the hegemony, the Judeo-Christian hegemony to the Western mind, it inspires a lot of fear, right?
Oh, yeah.
A ton of fear.
Dear Lord, yes.
And this is 100% how they get to you.
It is.
By you being afraid of them. And I like how Iamblichus describes them, because I feel there are definitely magicians and spirit conjurers that accept these things as all powerful and more powerful to
clearly
them.
They are not.
And they get taken on a ride because that they do that. But if you remove yourself and you eliminate the fear and you have an interaction with these things, you realize that they are like, don't know up from down, and they're pretty easy to manipulate by threatening them with
your presence,
God names, or your authority. Like, the more you realize your own personal authority, the more they don't mess with you, right?
Yeah.
And I think this is, so I like to use the word terrestrial spirit. And the reason I think he's saying terrestrial spirit is because this class of spirits has an uncanny ability to affect the material world.
Yes. Because they're closer, right? Is that why? Because they're that's positioned closer to our realm or
so layer. These are the ones that are going to physically manifest. These things are, you're going to get scratches on your body if you piss them off. They're going to knock on your walls. All that kind of scary.
Open your cabinets.
Yes.
Turn your lights on and off. Like that shit. And it's not funny. It's really not. Like everyone thinks, oh, ghosts don't, you know, I'm not scared of that. What? Yeah, you are. It's shit's terrifying. Yeah. It's not fun. And they know that, and that they feed into the fear. So,
well, that's what they're, So that's what they're trying to do. And they try to make you afraid, because if you are in fear, if you are in doubt, then they can get in. And that's when they can become a problem.
And why? Because you bargain, and you start bargaining when you're scared. You're like, please just stop, just stop, just stop. You know, I'll do anything.
Not just that, but it's the doubt, because the doubt removes your faith, and faith is the best defense you have against spirits.
I know. Right? I don't understand why faith in Jesus is the deal, but like,
faith in something higher, faith in a plan, faith in a universe. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, anything
that you're going home.
Yeah.
You know, that everything's gonna be okay.
Have you ever seen one?
What?
A demon? Seen it with your eyes?
Like a solid physical thing?
Yeah.
No, not a solid physical demon. Yeah.
I did.
Yeah.
Here. Yeah. Your friend.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that.
Yes, I know what you're
talking
about.
Was shocking, but not scary.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know how to.
It wasn't solid though.
Yeah, it was. It was a solid face over his shoulder that was blue.
Oh, okay.
It was small. Yeah. It wasn't like a regular person size.
You saw it. So I've seen phantasms, right? I've seen them as like, but not as like,
What?
Right here.
What do you mean? Describe what you're saying.
Like an apparition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But how does it look? Like, it's in the distance. It's not close. What?
No, in the room, it's like a bulking shadow with eyes and, and a form and that kind of thing. Yeah.
The shadow figure kind of vibe?
Not shadow people. Shadow people, different.
Yeah.
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 The shadow figures are completely different.
Yeah. Well, I guess I have that in here somewhere.
Yeah.
So,
we'll get onto them with astral entities.
Like to show off, right? Don't they like to show off their ability to move things or to get in your head? They like to kind of flex.
So the thing is, because I used to conjure them when I first got into magic, just to see if I could. I wasn't like really trying to work with them, right? But they
that's so crazy.
Yeah. But they were they seem at first very rational and chill and not that
bad. They're like a drug dealer. They're like, here's your first
very much. But I think that in their attitudes and the behaviors and the things that they say, I treat them like an animal almost. You never know when it's going to turn around and bite you.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And there is a trend in demonolatry. So historically, demon conjurers were never doing it to be friends with demons. They were doing it to bind them, command them, make them do what they want, or maybe they had a God complex and they were going to bind all of them and beat them up for Jesus or something like that.
Okay.
But historically, you were not supposed to be nice to these things in the grimoires.
Yeah.
You were supposed to threaten them. There is a trend in modern occultism amongst demonolaters that they turn them into gods, basically.
They give them all of the attributes of, they deify them, right?
So they're like, well, this demon is my patron. I give it offerings. I do rituals with it every so often. This demon is my friend, or it is looking out for me, and that kind of thing. And that is a very limited style of magic, right?
It's like sleeping with a crocodile. Like, you're just waiting for it to chop your head
off. Well, it's not just that, but it's like, how much can a demon really affect? Like, when you think about
it.
So
I know this. Yeah. I've seen it.
Yeah.
Seen it with somebody that was doing that. And in the beginning, they got accurate information. And then over time, it went absolutely bonkers.
Yeah.
Completely devolved.
That's it. Time I've seen people develop those relationships with demon summoning, it never ends well. It's like, at first, they have maybe like the first year, they have these like crazy magical abilities, and then starts getting a few years in, and they're doing criminal stuff.
Yes,
they're going crazy, hurting themselves, hurting other people, that kind of thing.
Like ravaged with addiction issues, like all kinds of self-medicating, narcissism coming out, like a lot of the very negative traits in people, like are it's all brought to the forefront. And the thing that I noticed about it was that the person that's afflicted with it doesn't see it at all, doesn't see the fact that all of their information has now become corrupt and convoluted. They don't see that people are talking about them negatively, like, what's wrong with him, or what's going on. But at the same time, they're uber paranoid too, so they become like pretty much paranoid schizophrenic, like over time.
It looks like that.
And you can see it happening, and when you realize what's happening, if you ever encounter this, you'll be able to see exactly this trajectory of what your life will likely be like if you were to go down that same path. And it doesn't look fun for me. Like, I would say absolutely not.
Yeah, so I like to pull it away. I try to take a step back from the Judeo-Christian understanding of them, because there's a weird phenomenon that happens in demonology, where some of the demons are old, like their names are old gods, or they're from different cultures, that kind of thing.
That were gods worshipped by the old cult. Yes.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. I'm not going to say that these people were worshiping a demon, or that this demon is actually a god and was supplanted by Jesus, or what. I'm not going to say that. I don't know what's going on there. The names are the same.
But I can guess that.
I like to take a step away from the Judeo-Christian understanding and reel it back to a terrestrial spirit, because I think that there is utility in them.
Well, right, because terrestrial spirits are the ones that are governing natural forces, right? Typically, on Earth here.
Yeah, I would say that they're just specifically the spirits that tend to have this effect on the terrestrial plane. But I think there is a utility, and this would be like the high mysteries of the left-hand path, and it would be a kind of Jobian. So at the, like, if you're not good at the left-hand path is basically just like systematized, antisocial personality disorder and hedonism, right?
It's like,
oh, I'm making sex, drugs, and rock and roll my religion. The more adept left-hand path practitioners, it's more about finding transcendence and God and probing the depths and darkness, right?
Right.
And so I think that there is I do not encourage people to interface with these things. They're not fun.
No.
They are demons in every sense of the word. They will hurt you. They lie don't to you. Feel good. They'll lie to you.
It's like the cops. It's like the police. The
Christians are right on that. Like these or things the Catholics are
right on that. Yeah.
So I don't encourage people to work with these things, but there is a practical utilization for them in magic. And it's kind of that Book of Job, Jesus's temptation with the devil in the desert, right? It's like St. Anthony the Great. It's like you are looking at this spirit, and this is a spirit that is representing a certain aspect of quote unquote evil. And where is God in that? Where do you find God in this interaction, right? Is it basically just denying the demon, or what is the demon's utility? Why is the demon like that?
Yeah. You know?
So I think that there is a utility for them, and that's the reason that they exist and the reason that they have certain types of powers. And it's definitely down to the person that's engaging with the demon, what they're going to do with that engagement, right? What is the point of that confrontation? Are you going to wrestle with the demon? Are you going to find God in the interaction? Because when you have interactions with these things, if you're not making a deal with them, it's usually pretty nasty. It doesn't feel good. You know, it's pretty dark. It's pretty scary. And it doesn't feel good.
No, I was so pumped, though. Like, I don't know what came over me that night. But I definitely have feared that my whole life, right? And movies like, you know, The Exorcist helped with that. But this is one of those things where people, I feel like most of the time, people that do engage with them are trying to get power. They're trying to get a leg up in some way, shape, or form. And it might give you that temporarily, right? But in the long run.
It's such a false power, though.
Yeah.
I haven't met demon summoners with like actual real power, you know.
No, and like haven't like the, most of the people gone crazy.
Yeah, the guy that owns the company that's running floors 7 and 8 down on Ocean Boulevard has more power than a guy that's conjured all 72 demons, you know. And that guy doesn't conjure demons.
Yeah,
he's just like, you know.
Yeah,
he just owns a couple apartment buildings.
Well, is it like
he's got way more power?
Is this like so they're like the lazy man's shortcut to success?
Is it? I don't know.
What it sounds like.
Yeah,
it's like I'd rather summon a demon and risk my eternal soul than actually put in hard work for this thing I want.
Yeah.
It depends on what they're asking for. I'm generalizing here. You know, I'm sure there's people that'll be like, what the hell are you talking about? But I'm saying the ones I know.
Yeah.
People I know that have said that I don't know that they've actually done it because I didn't see it. Mm-hmm. And even if I did see it, I probably wouldn't believe that they had the ability to do it. But the people that I have talked to that say they've done it typically always are that shortcut person.
Yeah.
You know, so that's just my personal experience. Don't come at me for that. I'm just saying in my experience. That's what I've seen. I don't know why you'd want to just necessarily mess around with something other than the fact that you're told not to, which, as we know, both of us have that problem.
Yeah.
Where we like to do things when someone tells us we can't do the thing.
You know, I'm
better at it now.
So when I was digging around with Goetia, it started as I was trying to protect myself from demons.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I learned, I was like, does this work? Can I do it? And like, you know how I am.
I
like,
know. I'm a
experimenter.
Yeah.
You know, I get a question in my head. I'm like, well, you're let's try
find
it.
The answer.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I'm going to find out even if it hurts.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes. But, and that's what I think a lot of people that practice magic are like that. Yeah. I'm going to venture a guess.
I hope so.
Yeah. I mean,
I really hope so. If you are practicing magic, like, please. Okay, maybe this is bad advice, but please experiment, you know, please.
Yeah, don't just theorize again, like we said last episode. Like, do something.
Yeah.
You know, see what happens.
I love running occult experiments.
Yeah.
And they're...
We do them a lot.
Yeah, we do them a lot. And, you know.
Yeah. And
sometimes I mess my head up, but...
Yeah, yeah. We both... You have existential crises like every week, but...
every week.
Yeah, I do. Or every other week, maybe. Yeah. Whereas mine's like occasionally every couple months. Maybe that's not true. Maybe mine's off more frequent, but it is... You know, they are, I don't know, demons are not my favorite. I don't care to interact personally with them. Uh-huh. Although when they're attached to other people that I'm around, I am all about it.
Yeah.
I'm all about it. Let's get it. Let's get take care of it. Even though that's probably dangerous too. That's probably a very dangerous mindset.
Yeah.
So, but I think that the reason that they exist is because you can't have one without the other. Because it's not a separate thing. They're not two different things. The good and evil, quote unquote, are the same coin, just different sides. It's a spectrum. It's a, you know, it's not one or the other.
Yeah, that's why I like Iamblichus's description of this class of spirits over the kind of spiritual warfare kind of myth that's perpetuated in angelology and demonology. That there's like, it's like a battle of good versus evil, like a Marvel movie, you know?
I mean, that doesn't really even make sense because, again, if it's, there's the creator, you know, they're both from that. So are they be warring? It's just, maybe they're just serving different aspects of humanity or of the universe or cosmos, whatever.
Yeah, I think that's my, one of my greatest heresies is that it's like, oh, heresy. Like, this is a being from God, just like me, you know, but
it's if you believe that there's a, you know, supreme all encompassing one, then that has to be true.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's that,
mm-hmm.
which also says things like
the question the question to me is not how could God let this exist? The question to me is, what is the meaning of my interaction with this? You know, why am I interfacing with this right now? Hmm. Why does God want me to experience this right
well,
now? That's what my question is.
So I think you can look at it kind of the way you can, I think you can compare it to having the unfortunate experience of knowing someone that has narcissistic personality disorder. Why are you having to interact with this horrible person, right?
Yeah.
Okay, why? Well, I'm going to tell you why. Because they are a mirror of the worst version of yourself. They're like a reminder of what can happen when people don't take care of their psyche, when people are selfish, when people are self-absorbed and don't care about other people. And when you see that in someone else, you know, the things that bother you the most about those people are going to be the things that you struggle with already, if you don't want to admit it.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's a mirror opportunity right there for you to see where it could go very wrong or how it can look if you continue on a certain path or continue with a certain mindset, I think. Because otherwise it's just torture and for nothing.
Yeah.
So again, the brain wants answers. So that's my answer. That's it. See, I solved it for everyone. You're welcome. So
I want to go from that though, because Iamblichus he said something interesting about what did he say about the heavens right there? He said, "For it threatens either to burst the heavens," and that reminds me of our boy John D.
Yeah,
right, John D. of Anakian Angel Magic, and we're gonna have to do an episode on that because that is one of the most fascinating stories in all of the occult. I love it. It's been done to death, but I just love that the story of John Dee and Edward Kelly. However, his Enochian angels, the popular theory in the occult, or one of the popular theories in the occult, is that these Enochian angels were not angels at all.
No.
Right? So there's a few different branches of magic that lean heavily into the Enochian angels. And it's gonna be Aleister Crowley's magic, Thelema, OTO, and the Golden Dawn. Golden Dawn loves Enochian magic too, right? And so if you go and ask the OTO or somebody who practices Golden Dawn, their experiences with the Knocking Angels, they usually report pretty glowing experiences, right?
Okay.
However, when you read what Dee and Kelly were doing, their operations with them, these things don't seem to know their head from their ass, the spirits that they're contacting.
Mm-hmm.
They are fronting as all powerful, but seem pretty powerless. Because the whole time Dee and Kelly are like begging them for money because they're going broke, chasing these things around Europe. And
wait, they had to chase them? What do you mean?
Oh, no, John Dee was a spy. He was the
first 007.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And while he's on the road, he's conducting these experiments with Edward Kelly.
Were they drinking like absinthe?
Probably. I don't know. These things are also are telling Dee and Kelly that they need to release them from the Watchtower so that they can, you know, just like trigger the apocalypse. Yeah. Which is sounds a lot like Iamblichus's spirits to me. So there is a theory, a popular theory within occultism, that the Anakin angels are not angels at all. I tend to side with that theory.
Yeah.
Just if the way that you have conversations with them, the way that these things speak and how they're accessed, and they're accessed through magic squares and magic circles, mm-hmm. numerology, that kind of stuff, they seem to align with the Iamblichus's terrestrial spirits, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So I don't think that they're angels as well. I don't know if that makes them demons because they behave just a little bit differently.
Astral spirits?
Yeah.
Maybe?
No. We're going to have to get into astral spirits. That's a whole different class of things. But they're definitely an intelligence, and they're capable of triggering like crazy synchronicities and that kind of stuff. But they seem to either be deceptive or misinformed. But so the Knocking Angels, what are they? Are they really angels? I don't know. But these are beings that you're going to run into if you're doing Aleister Crowley's magic or you're doing Golden Dawn magic.
Okay.
You're trying to conjure something like a spirit for money. They're going to point you at an Enochian angel.
Okay. I mean, all right. So regarding the ones that we're going to encounter in magic.
Yes.
Okay. So ancestors, right?
Yeah.
Ancestors is one that's also under the classification of the dead. Right. Yeah. However, there is an elevation of some of them to a different level than just the dead. Typically, these are the ones that are not known to you, but mm-hmm. are from the origin of your line, your bloodline or something. Right. Yeah. You've never met them. You know, they're ancient. So that's not the same as communicating with the dead that you know.
Oh, right? Okay.
It's not the same. Yeah. They can be wild. They can be unkempt. They can be adversarial.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're trying to contact your ancestors, ancestors, ancient ones, be careful because some of them aren't so nice. You might want to do some research into your family before you do that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Another one would be, you know, some land spirits, which is, I don't know if that's the same for you as terrestrial spirits, but like the nature and land spirits that exist that a lot of more pagan practitioners, you know?
Yeah, I think they're different.
This would be something like, you know, brownies, for instance.
Yeah.
Fairies, elves, little people, it says.
Little people.
You know, then there's tree spirits.
Yes.
We saw those recently. Water spirits and, the river, lake spirits, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. she's like the lady in the water, you know, mm-hmm. that's a huge one. Everyone knows about that, right?
Yeah.
La Llorona, right? What is it? How do you say it?
La Llorona?
Yeah, that one, like the lady in the water, right? That steals kids and drowns them. And then there's the familiars, animal spirits. A lot of times people will have encounters with animals. You know, have you had one of those happen to you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Back when I was a teenager and I was really into
Psychonautry, I had a experience. I kept having an experience with this dog thing.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had coyotes. Coyotes, always. And owls, you know, and crows. Those three. Ravens, coyotes, bears, and dogs are the most common for animal or familiar spirit sightings. And that's black dogs, especially.
Yeah, mine was a black, black dog.
And then also snakes, that's where I got serpents.
My DJ name from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You really?
Yeah, that's where it's from.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Remind me to tell you what I just remembered right now. Elementals.
Yeah.
These are not nice. Elementals are not nice, you know?
Oh, the elementals?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, I mean, what kind of elementals are we talking about?
Gnomes, sylphs.
Oh, yeah.
Salamanders,
you know? Salamanders.
Weather spirits. Then we have the winds, the spirits of wind.
Yeah, right?
That bring in the Wicca uses this like Guardians of the Watchtowers.
Well, yeah. So let's go back to the elementals. So the elementals are something that you're actually banishing with the lesser banishing ritual of the pentagram.
Mm-hmm.
The elementals represent the four elements, but this actually comes from a late Renaissance man named Paracelsus, who was a mad doctor that was into the occult. He wanted to use the occult to be the best medicine man the world had ever seen, right? And so he reformatted alchemy for medicine, ditched Galen and all the wacky antique herbalism and that kind of stuff. And he revolutionized Western medicine, but he also revolutionized the occult. And the literary output of this guy is
nuts.
Ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I mean, hundreds of books.
Yeah.
Like, crazy.
He's like an L. Ron Hubbard.
But part of his occult theory was he took the gnomes and he assigned the gnomes to the these elementals to the alchemical elements or whatever.
Yeah.
And, they made it their way into ceremonial magic, I think, with Eliphas Levi, right? God. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he kind of, Eliphas Levi is the one that turned it into like, oh, well, these things you need to invoke and you need to banish in order to like balance your elements and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we have, you know, I know the gnomes well. It's like the sock gnomes, the underwear gnomes.
Yeah.
The Tupperware lid gnomes, like what? Like, stop misplacing my
Tupperware
stuff.
Tupperware is so out of touch, dude.
Yeah, you know what I mean. It's like, where's all my stuff going? It's like, just, it drives me crazy.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
it's just like a certain type of person has Tupperware.
We have Tupperware.
You have Tupperware. I am a strong millennial man. I have black meal prep, like.
Sorry, the Zennial in me says Tupperware, because it's like, we used to have parents had Tupperware parties back in the day.
It's like, no, dude, like, we have mason jars and meal prep containers. That's what we use. Okay? Yeah. Deli cups. You know, that's
sorry, I'm not as cool as you.
It's like, and I see the Tupperware, I'm like, this is so out of touch.
It's cold, you have kids, you need it, okay?
So. I'm teasing you. it's just like one of those, like, generational things, you know. It's like
everyone I know has some kind of form of Tupperware.
Millennials drink out of mason jars and they store everything in delis and meal.
That's Tupperware, man. Yeah. Like, I'm not Tupperware. When I say Tupperware, I'm not talking about the brand. I'm talking about just plastic food storage.
Where they've got like the pink and purple lids, and none of the lids match sizes.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what the gnomes are getting at. I'm telling you, they're like
a mistake of generations past. I don't know whose idea that was and why everybody got on board with it, but it's never worked for anybody. Nobody who has ever bought Tupperware has kept all those lids with the containers.
No, because the gnomes come and take it.
Somebody like, and thank God for millennials coming along and being like, why don't we just like, you know,
use another form of Tupperware that's just
the same size.
Something else.
Like, instead of buying all these different colors and sizes, just like use the same size. They're all one color and nobody's fighting in the.
You know, okay, cupboard. That's smart. All right. Yeah. Okay, fine. I give you that. I give you that. You know, okay.
It only took us, what, like 50 years to get there?
Yeah. Well, no, plastic is like a new invention, right?
New invention.
Yeah. It was like in the 60s, 70s.
It's
50 years.
Shit. He's right.
I know.
Yeah, I know. I'm close. Wait, not yet. Yeah. Let's see. So, but like gnomes and sylphs and salamanders and then the undines, I don't know, water. Yeah. And then the weather spirits. And then we have dream and astral spirits. So dream spirits are common. People encounter these a lot, right? So there's a couple of these. There's one that are the sleep paralysis demons, right?
Yeah.
Which that's a new term. People are using that lately. But there's the night hags or succubi.
Mm-hmm.
And then the male version, incubus, right? But what else is there? There's also... So
let's go with these astral entities, right? Because this is incredibly important. Mm-hmm. And I think... So astral entities... Astral leeches, parasites, sleep paralysis, demons, these all shadow people, these all fall in the same category.
Yeah.
But they're pretty recent addition to the spiritual lexicon.
Yeah, they are.
Right? They are a product of theosophy and anthroposophy and basically the Victorian currents and everything that poured out of them. And this is actually, I think, one of the most useful things to come out of this currents.
Okay.
Whereas, like, maybe they got a lot of other stuff wrong. I think their development into astral fauna is incredibly important and incredibly relevant that people are aware of what it is. So these things are pretty unintelligent, and they're not harmful like your demon or terrestrial spirit would be. Like, they can't hurt you as in like move stuff around and scratch up your body.
That's good.
But they are an emotional drain and they keep you, they Ew. Do not feel good. It's
okay.
Like,
okay, this living... is a person. These are people.
What?
These are people.
What do you mean? Oh, yeah. Yeah. So it's like
psychic vampires.
It's like living in a house that's infested with bed bugs.
Okay, you know? So the energy you're talking about, it could be in the house itself too, right? So
it's in your environment. So when you do magic, especially if you do magic, you attract these things, right?
Sure do.
So these things are not that intelligent.
They're light bugs.
Yeah, they're light bugs. They're not that intelligent. They're really weak. But the problem is, there's tons of them, and they're like a zombie horde. They keep coming. When you do magic, you are basically putting out a huge flag that signals to these things, hey, I'm over here.
Yeah, no.
They start magnetizing towards you. Another time they come to you is the transition from wake to sleep, right? And that's when we see the shadow people. I mean, this also happens when you do a bunch of stimulants. You stay up for 3 days, you know? And you kind of... No.
I don't know. Okay. Never had that happen.
But yeah, like people that see shadow people on drugs, you know, it's like you're not taking care of yourself. Your brain's starting to shut down and that filter's getting removed. But when you're in that, when you're in that hypnagogic state, you're able to pick up on these things a little bit easier. And that's when they're rendered as shadow people.
Right. Because your subconscious mind is still running the show at that point. Like it's not your conscious. Your conscious mind has not come fully online yet when you're just waking up. So
these
you're
things,
able to hear it.
I think my favorite Rudolf Steiner was especially developed this insane complex world describing like how these things function. If you want to take that Disneyland ride, go right ahead. He's a lot of fun to listen to.
Yes.
But I think Franz Barden in the beginning of Initiation to Hermetics, he talks about astral larvae for a few paragraphs or something. And I think that's one of the best way to describe them. Like they're leeches, they're parasites. They feed off of anxiety, depression. They keep you anger. They keep you stuck in that. And you can feel them when they're on you. It's maybe if you haven't done the work to clean yourself, if you're not doing regular purification, if you're not doing regular banishing, you're not as aware.
Yeah.
But when you are doing that regularly, then you can feel when they're on you.
So I'm going to say that most of my clients, when they come to me, like for, counsel or readings, A lot of them that are experiencing lethargy.
Yes, that's
depression.
It's huge.
Lack of just motivation. That's something like that. It's going
on. So this isn't, it's when like the anxiety isn't clinical, the depression isn't clinical. It's not when it's like a legit mental illness, but you feel stuck, right? You feel like there's a weight on you and it's just enough to like, you mm-hmm. know, mess you up
yeah.
or keep you stuck where you are.
And that can happen from other people too. So a lot of times these kind of nastier or, you know, unsavory spirits work through other people to get at people. Mm-hmm. So they'll come in the form of some partner or friend that is just a drain on you.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, takes advantage. Like, they're not even aware they're doing it most of the time. Mm-hmm. And they just suck the life out of you. You know, everyone knows this person. Everybody knows a person that when they walk in the room, you're like, oh, shit. You know,
yeah.
Here goes our fun. And, you know, I've known a lot of people that go through this and then they go get some kind of cleansing done and then they're like a whole other person. And it's like, what? Oh, it's crazy. You know, really is. And I don't know if that's psychosomatic or actual.
It's not
psychosomatic. It doesn't matter. It still works.
I used to think it was psychosomatic. I'm fully aware now that that is not. Like, there is a legitimate difference. And, I mean, so these things are easy to get rid of. They're incredibly easy to get rid of.
Yep.
Anybody could do it. You don't have to do a crazy ritual. You can get rid of them with visualization, smudging. A lot of times when you smudge, this is what you're cleaning your house of, right?
Yeah.
But warding your home keeps them out. They can't, they're not powerful things. They're not intelligent.
And they hide,
things.
Though. They will hide. But they also, this is kind of what you feel if someone's doing like magic on you, like sending you negativity. That's like the first sign would be all of a sudden starting to have that feeling of kind of despair or just like blah, you know, being blah.
That
like it dulls you. It dulls your life, like your light or something. It's hard to really put into words, but it just, it like suppresses you in a way.
Yeah.
And that's a good indicator.
And so, when these things are attached to you, though, if you are doing magic, which is why we always you should always be purifying and banishing. When these things attach to you, if they're attached to you and you're not doing anything about it, then that opens you up to more nefarious.
It's like
infernal
like Pigpen's little dust cloud.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's like keeps getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah,
that's what happens if you don't take the time to actually clear it off.
So I think we're going to take a break really quick. We'll be right back. All right. Welcome back from our break. So we're moving on. You had something else for us?
Okay. So let me since we're going to talk, we were asked to provide, information on the hierarchy of spirits. I'm going to I'm going to backtrack a little bit and just go, okay, why is it common for people to experience ancestors and the dead? Okay. So it's because they lived among us and they live in our memory. Okay. So that's what that makes us vulnerable to being able to see them because we have connection. Okay. With the nature and land spirits, it's because they inhabit the same physical plane as us. They're here in real time, existing in their own, but usually not interacting with us, but some of us see it. Okay. The animal spirits and familiars, again, living on this plane, you know, we're connected with animals, we have them. That is not uncommon. Okay. But then we have some of the other ones, which is like elementals. These are typically sensed more than seen. You'll sense them, or you'll have your Tupperware missing, you know, or your socks missing, whatever. I'm joking, but things that are just always getting mucked up, right? They tend to cause a lot of chaos in your life, like messing around your things. And so you're like, can't find what you're looking for, that kind of stuff. You don't see them, but the presence makes itself known. Then the dream and astral is because, again, like you said, they're in that in-between stage of wake and sleep, right? So they're more susceptible. Then we have the angels, daemons, and tutelary spirits. And these are common because they're the intermediaries between human and celestial spirits, right?
The celestial realm, the divine realm, the infernal realm.
Yeah. But then a lot of people, I think, come into contact with a certain type of spirit, different from demons,
uh-huh.
but it's the trickster.
Oh, yeah.
Spirit, okay? Ambiguous spirits. So these are common because they intrude. They are the ones that will intrude into human lives, and they're not usually invited necessarily. They just find that in and will act accordingly.
Yeah, so the like when you're talking about high strangeness cases mm-hmm. too, those are often people like to point to those intel as like those are probably trickster intel.
Let me give you three examples of names.
Yeah.
Hecate okay. is one. The Black Man of the Witch Trials, the Black Hat Man
yeah.
is another one. And Djinn.
Djinn.
Are considered to also be chthonic, trickster, or ambiguous spirits.
So, yeah, Djinn it is a messy, difficult topic to approach because there's a ton of different influences that go into Djinn and
yeah.
come out of Djinn.
Yes.
So you want to go into Djinn a little
okay,
bit?
Okay, in a second, but I want to say okay. like Papa Legba is one of these two.
All right.
So that's the crossroads person, the person yeah. that has the you know liminal holding space. Okay. Then they have really common is spirits of illness and healing.
Mm-hmm.
Spirits that come and relieve some ailment. Okay. There's people that talk about this all the time. It's maybe even near-death experiences might be considered that if they have some angelic being that, you know, brings them back from the dead. That's pretty much, you know, being yeah. cured of your death, right? And then we have the celestial. These are very rare. People usually don't see celestial beings, like angels, etc. If you go to an evangelical church, they'll probably tell you all of them have seen it, but they're probably not accurate. This is not a common thing to see. In practice. In fact, that's why they have the HGA ceremony ritual, because the goal is to see it, right? Is to interact with it.
Yeah.
And not many people are successful with it, allegedly, yes. right? So that's, you know, these are the most common that people in the occult will, you know, tend to encounter, with some being more prevalent than others. You know, so it's again, it's ancestors of the dead, house and land spirits, animal guides and familiars, elementals, dream and astral, guardian, daemons, angels, and tricksters. So tricksters are the, I think, very common. So djinns. What are djinns?
Oh, yeah. So djinn. So the djinn, I guess in the broadest sense of the term, you can think of them in the original Arabic as almost the Arabic equivalent of a daimon, right?
Genie? No?
No, like a like djinn is a term for spirit. Okay. So they can be good, they can be neutral, they can be bad in the broadest sense of the okay. word, right? One of the key distinctions between them, though, once you get into Quranic djinn, is that the Quranic djinn, the djinn from Islam, as mm-hmm. reformatted into Islam, is that they are made before humans, and they are made from fire instead of earth.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
So this is one of the key discernments. And these djinn exist in a either dimension right on top of us, but they have free will just like humans, and they are kind of morally neutral. They can be evil and they can be good, but these are when they start getting into a trickster realm, right? Okay. However, the occult mythology of Solomon being mastering the demons and trapping them into a vase, this is not a feature of Christianity. It's a feature of Judaism, but mm-hmm. it's also a feature of Islam. A lot of that lore yeah. comes from Islam. And so there is a Solomonic interpretation of djinn,
mm-hmm.
where djinn take on the role of demons, right?
Yes.
So you'll see in Arabic magic and Islamic magic, there are strains of it where the djinn sometimes have the exact same names as the demons from the Ars Goetia.
Yes.
Right? Paimon is considered a djinn king, right? But this would be a Solomonic expression of Arabic magic. And the Solomonic tradition does
belong to Arabic magic. It actually comes from Constantinople, the Byzantine Empire, right?
Yeah.
Is when the Muslims got up there. So there's a bunch of different understandings of what jinn are. They can be kind of like a daimon, where they're just these spirits that are in nature, around us, operating everywhere. They hang out in graveyards and toilets. That's
toilets.
Kind of what, yeah, that's more of the folklore. But then there's also this understanding of them where these like kind of extra dimensional creatures that, you know, have families and their own religion and their own beliefs and that kind of thing. And then there's this jinn or demons understanding, right? And that's kind of how like modern Islam understands jinn. Okay. And that's also how modern jinn summoners understand jinn.
So they're demons.
Right. So a lot of modern Arabic magic deals with Solomonic expressions of magic.
I feel right? like, just curious, when you consider something to be demonic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are you then attributing to it power or taking away power from it?
I think it depends on how you look at it. For me personally, I don't assign demons that much power. But that comes from a place of faith, of initiation, of gnosis, that there is a plan, that kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to like share that with somebody. Like you can't say the right words to make somebody understand that about themselves, right? So a large part of magical practice, and especially as you've been doing it for a long time, is realizing your authority and actualizing your authority, yeah. Learning exactly what you are.
Yes.
And that's a hard thing to communicate to somebody.
You can't
write it in a book. You can't. It's something that you have to know, and you have to know through repeated confrontation with mystic experiences,
yeah.
with spirits.
Yeah.
Like when you practice magic, you are awakening and realizing your authority,
yes.
Remembering what you are and why you're here. So I don't assign demons power because, I understand that I'm a human, and that is an incredibly special thing. It is an incredibly powerful thing, right? The angels, are jealous of us. The demons are jealous of us.
Mm-hmm.
The dead want to be like us, want to be back here, right?
Yeah.
With us.
Yes.
And it's something that as we are in this incarnation, we take for granted that we are spiritual beings with corporeal bodies.
Yeah.
Which makes us very, very lucky.
Yeah, we
and
are.
It lends us an amount of authority. Now, you can summon a demon to have some effect on the physical world, but there is no effect that demon can have.
That's better than what you can
do. That's better than the one that you can do with a physical body.
It's true.
Right?
Yeah, we can actually touch things, yeah. Manipulate, like pick things. Yeah. We actually have...
You can summon a demon to raise a djinn, or you can go buy enriched uranium, and that's probably going to be more effective, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. You could do a lot of things as a human that you can't when you don't have an actual body.
Yeah. And it's when you...
Is that why they possess us?
Yeah. Don't let them in.
Yeah, don't.
Don't give them fear, because that's what feeds them. And the thing is, like, once a spirit is in, that's when it really gets you. And so a large part of the battle is, like, having psychological fortitude, spiritual fortitude. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why... I think it's incredibly important for magicians to have mystic practices. That's why I look to the institutional religions a lot for inspiration on my practice. A lot of people in magic are running away from the institutional religions. They think that they're liars or they're full of crap. But really that spiritual fortitude that provides you with the ability to interface with these things without them really getting to you is accepting the wisdom that comes from those great mystics and those great theologians and those great philosophers, you know, even if their institutions may have wronged people in the past and or are wronging people today, you know, that doesn't mean that there weren't people within those institutions that are reaching the heights of spiritual experience. And so really getting that spiritual fortitude and that psychological fortitude in order to confront these things without letting them in has a lot to do with, you know, having that repeated mystical experience.
Yeah. Well, for me, it didn't work. That didn't work for me. I had repeated mystical experiences. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I literally died that I was freed of that.
Yeah.
It wasn't. I don't think I would have ever gotten there otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
I would have always had this doubt. Always. Mm-hmm. And that doubt is all that is needed to really muck up your practice.
Yeah, really, really mess things up to make it like your practice really chaotic, to affect you, to let things in, that kind of stuff. And I'm not saying I'm absolutely fortified, you know, but stuff gets to me. I think the weakest, like one of my biggest weaknesses for things to get to me is through doubt, right? And that's how they try to get to you. They try to get you into doubt. They try to get you into a place.
And that's the thing that's unfortunate about faith, is that it's just that. It's not, you hope. You're hoping. You don't know.
But
faith means that you don't know, that you just have faith.
I'm going to disagree.
You can't know unless you know.
Faith,
right?
Faith to the Protestant American is accepting something as true without any evidence. That is not faith.
That's crazy.
That is not faith.
Yeah. Well, that's what
the faith of an initiate is, the faith of knowing, right? You know through direct experience, right? I don't have faith in God because some guy in a room.
That's why you are able to discern and okay.
But that's what I'm saying. Like when I say the word faith, it's not because there's some guy in a room reading out of a translation of a mistranslation of like five translations downstream and is saying, well, this is how I'm interpreting this. I don't have faith because this guy told me to, or else I was going to go to hell. I have faith because I have direct experience and direct knowing with divinity. Right. Yeah. And that is my faith.
That's why Christians get
so
possessed all the time, because they don't have that. Well, they have faith.
There's a difference. And so it's like on one end of the spectrum, there are people that think faith is accepting something is true without like any evidence or direct experience.
In fact, evidence contrary. Yeah.
And then there's the other camp that thinks faith is a dirty word because this camp uses it, right? Mm. Where it's like, no, faith is not a dirty word. Faith is the strongest thing that an occultist, that a magician has in their toolbox.
Really? Right? It's not knowing? Is faith stronger than knowing?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just curious as to how that works.
Faith is, you know, you have this experience with divinity, with God. You know that God is real. You know the immortal nature of your soul, right? And you know that no matter what's going to happen, that everything's going to be okay.
Yeah. That's hard. A lot of people can't get there.
Well, yeah, a lot of people can't. And like, when you get that, it's very easy to, like, the doubt is the chink in that armor. It is the chink in that, right? And so practicing, like having a practice of mysticism that's adopted from mystics, people that specialize in this, not just conjuring and doing magic, and that's the totality of my experience.
Yeah, like, I mean,
you're not fortifying your faith, right?
So you're not strengthening your own spiritual reserve like that, right? So you should be doing some kind of devotional kind of practice.
It doesn't even have to be with deity. I mean, like, it's really popular for occultists.
That's not what I meant. Just spiritual in general, what you, to make sure that you're nourishing your own kind of energy, I guess. I don't know, to protect yourself.
That you're not letting, I mean, spirits are spirits. They are intelligences, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's like dealing with a person. You could be talking to the smartest person in the world, and that person is a total dumbass at something, right?
Yeah, everybody's good at something,
and it's the same with spirits. You can't take them as all-knowing. They are not all-knowing beings. They're not gods.
In fact, I've encountered don't know anything of what I want to know. They seem to not know really anything of that's scary or, you know, could be advantageous to them. It seems like they guess more than anything.
So, yeah, I think I'm trying to lay down actualizing this authority, understanding this authority that you have.
So
as a spiritual being with a corporeal body.
Yeah.
Realizing that this is an incredible authority, that you are more powerful than
Catholic Church. They're able to get those people right again that are possessed. So clearly the entities that do that are not as powerful as the men that do the reading of the prayers.
Yeah.
So, and that's just known. Anything that is below us in the hierarchy is not going to be something that can, unless we let it, take us over. But the way we let it can be very tricky.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, that's where the danger lies. Mm-hmm. The danger is in fear. If you let the thing get you, right?
Yeah, that's why I laugh when Christians watch our show and say things. I'm like, okay, Dad. Your fear of everything is exactly that. Like, that's the door, you know? When you know that you're the one that has the authority and that you are the one that can command these things to leave you alone, you're not as scared and you don't have as much doubt, you know, or doubt. But I swear to God, the ones that just come at us all the time have lots of doubt, I think.
Hmm.
The people that comment.
Oh,
you know? Yeah. Yes. But so we have gone over a lot of different spirits in this, but I think the point here is that for the most part, the spirits that are above us in hierarchy are typically not going to do anything really negative. They're not going to come and suck your energy. They're not going to come parasite you, right?
No.
The ones that are on the same level or beneath us are the ones that we need to worry about more so and be careful with.
Don't worry. That
yeah.
That's the important thing. Don't worry. Stay on top of your spiritual practice.
Yeah, and if you're scared of something and you're not gonna be able to handle it, don't do it. You know?
Yeah.
Like, don't open yourself up to that if you don't think you have it.
I don't encourage people to just be, it is very taxing.
Yeah.
Know, just going out and conjuring things just because you can.
Yeah.
It requires a lot of spiritual discipline.
It does.
In a lot of spiritual practice in order to have those confrontations. But when you have those confrontations, like, you need to know, you know, like, there is a reason for it. And this is why initiation is one of the first things that people go through when they go into the cult, or should be going through when they get into the cult and when they get into magic. Because initiation is what wakes you up to that authority.
Oh, yeah.
It wakes you up to faith, that direct knowing, your immortal nature. And it's not an immortal nature that Madame Blavatsky told you you had.
I don't even know.
It's not an immortal nature that, you know, some philosopher said that you have. It's a direct experience with the immortality of your soul.
Yes.
And once you have that, you can get through these things.
Yes, definitely. So so hopefully that helps clear up the hierarchy of a million different kinds of spirits across every culture. You know, and there's a lot more that we could go into, but it's you know, these are the typical ones that you're going to encounter doing magic.
Yeah, that's the typical ones. I mean, we didn't really touch on angels, but I mean, long story short, they're bulldozers of God's will.
Yeah,
you know? And if creepy. Your will is not in line with God's will, then, you know, things aren't going to go the way that you expect them to. So,
Yeah. So,
but that, I mean, that's normally the case if you're not in line with God's will. So,
touche.
You know,
touche. Yes. Okay. So, are we good?
Yeah. We're okay. Good.
I think we're good. Thanks for the idea on this episode. We appreciate it very much.
Yeah. And thank you for the idea.
You know, feel free to recommend other topics. You know, we'd love to hear it.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks so much, guys. Good night.
Good night.
You've been listening to Discourse, where we venture into the mysteries of esotericism, the occult, and the depths of spiritual exploration. I am Abimon the Great, joined as always by Dr. Anna Stone, bringing adept insights to help guide your journey. Remember, the path of wisdom is illuminated by both knowledge and experience. Until next time, continue your exploration and stay attuned to the unseen.